to the Beef Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to have another discussion around greenhouse gases, understanding what they are, where they're produced, and also what are cattle's contributions to that. To discuss this in more detail, I'm joined today by Dr. Galen Erickson, as well as Dr. Paul Kononoff, who are going to talk about this and also in relation to a research project that they're involved with that's funded by a major NIFA grant. Thanks for joining me today, gentlemen.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you.
Dr. Erickson, let's kind of start at the basics. What are greenhouse gases? We hear those talked about, and I think we have some basic knowledge about that across the industry, but let's go back to the fundamentals a bit and talk about what they are and where they're produced.
Yeah, you know, and I think, Aaron, especially in the beef industry and the dairy industry, producers sometimes may not like that term, the greenhouse gases, but I think it's important for them to understand what's all this discussion about and really what's it mean to them, and that's what our goal is too. Greenhouse gases in concept are simply that they act like a greenhouse, or they act like your car in the heat of the summer when the sun's shining, right? Heat comes in from the sun to the earth. And if it doesn't bounce back out, it gets trapped, and that increases, a greenhouse effect, if you will. And there's really three gases that people talk about that are helping to trap some of that heat, sort of like a greenhouse would. And those three gases are CO2, carbon dioxide, which is we often refer to as CO2, methane, which is CH4. Which everybody's probably heard about if they're in the beef industry. And then the one you may not be as familiar with is nitrous oxide. And what's interesting is that many people talk about CO2, and sometimes you'll hear things referred to as CO2 equivalents. What that simply means is that methane is more potent, meaning it traps heat better than CO2. And N2O is very potent, like 300 times more potent than carbon dioxide. So a little bit of N2O equals a lot of CO2, and methane's kind of in the between. And that's where I think there's confusion, because people talk about driving cars or burning fossil fuel, which is CO2, right, related, and then comparing that to raising beef cattle, which is methane, or fertilizing a crop field, which is N2O. And so there's different issues across different industries, but they're really all three greenhouse gases, and they all act a little differently. Now, I've got to share that it's interesting, and we're still learning a lot, but atmospheric scientists are actually very interested in maybe we haven't had the correct potency on methane. So if you look up in books or online, many times you'll see people say methane's 25 times worse than CO2. So methane, one unit of methane will be 25 units of CO2. Actually, sometimes you'll see 27. So there's a lot of debate on that. But nowadays, we've actually learned that methane is degraded to CO2 naturally in the atmosphere. It doesn't last 1,000 years like CO2 does, and only lasts in the atmosphere for 10 to 12 years. And so it's not as potent as we used to think. And so, again, that's really only relevant if you want to compare power plants and driving a vehicle or burning fossil fuel to beef cattle, which is not necessarily a comparison we're interested in. Now, all that said, you know, cattle do naturally produce methane because they're a ruminant, and the microbes that are in the rumen do a lot of great things that allow us to convert fiber to human edible product. But one of the downsides is they naturally produce methane in the process. Same thing in wetlands and swamps and landfills. Anytime you have anaerobic conditions, meaning there's no oxygen or no air, and there's microbes there, you're going to have methane. And so we've been, you know, we think that it's a natural process in cattle, but we also think that there's ways we can manipulate that in the future. And if that helps our beef and dairy industries in the minds of some consumers, then we think that's an okay thing and positive to explore.
As we think about the amount of greenhouse gas, in particular, I'm thinking here methane, that cattle contribute, as we look at the total, what percent would that make up?
Well, agriculture in general is allocated or measured or assumed to be about 10%, and it varies some, 10 or 11% of our total greenhouse gas emissions in the US. That would be CO2, N2O, and methane combined. That's all of agriculture. Ruminants, beef and dairy would be somewhere around estimated to be contributing 4 to 5% of the total of our total greenhouse gases. And so it's about half of agriculture, and most of that's because of enteric methane that, again, cattle naturally produced. But we got to be a little careful there because just for methane, the amount that cattle produce as a whole for the US is actually a fairly large proportion. And so if you're only looking at methane, sometimes you'll see that cattle contribute 50% of the footprint, but that's for methane alone. That's about 40 to 50%. If it's all greenhouse gases, it's not a very large proportion. So some people have said, well, why even explore this? Well, again, if we can figure out ways to maintain or improve productivity for our beef producers and dairy producers, and yet cut methane without causing any harm, we think that's probably worth exploring because some consumers and the general public are interested in that. We don't want, I guess, Aaron, what I don't want is people to say, look, we're worried about the greenhouse gas concerns, so let's stop drinking milk or eating beef because of that. That's not the mitigation or the option we want to explore. We think it's much better to, if they're worried about that, we think there's ways that we can change that and positively impact it in the future.
Dr. Kononoff, you've been part of the dairy industry and doing research there. And actually, it's been of interest to me to just see the increase in demand for dairy products here over the last 5 to 10 years. Obviously, this is an important issue to the dairy industry as well. Speak to that a bit and how this kind of research and understanding that can be helpful from the dairy aspect.
Yeah, thank you, Aaron. So I'm Paul Kononoff. I'm a professor of dairy nutrition and an extension dairy specialist. Also, I just actually completed my final term as editor-in-chief of Journal of Dairy Science, which is one of the major scientific journals related to dairy science. And I can tell you that's been a fun opportunity to work with that journal. Not only work with people on the production side, like myself, but also people on the food side and the food processing side. And clearly, we've seen great consumption of dairy products, not only in the U.S. but worldwide. And it's very clear that dairy provides important nutrients. I mean, most notably calcium and protein. And so these have been very important nutrients to feed the world. And I know more recently, with the interest in things like protein drinks, we're seeing more and more interest for dairy-based protein. And so we're seeing scientists not only recognize that need, but trying to find ways to produce it in a very sustainable manner. And so one of the things that we've seen in the journal is a lot of interest in trying to understand rumen microbiology. And I think, Galen, it's probably fair to say when you and I were going through graduate school, a lot of the rumen microbiology science was old, but over the last 20 years, we've just seen incredible rebirth of the field. Given some of the technologies related to isolating DNA by rumen microorganisms and understanding not only how many rumen microorganisms there are in the gut, but just who they are and what they're doing. And this has been a really exciting field, not only to understand digestion of a dairy cow, but also things like methane production. And I know in the journal, which is a nice sample size of the type of science that's going on in the world, is we've seen a lot of interest not only in studying methane and rumen microbiology, but also studying additives that could potentially reduce methane. And this science has driven a couple of really interesting products that are available to the industry today. Probably most notable is one called 3-nitrooxypropanol, or abbreviated as 3-NOP. This has been studied, boy, just off the top of my head, for about 10 years. And it's been shown to be a compound that, when it's put into the animal feed, may reduce methane production by as much as 20%. And so it shows that it has action on the microorganisms that are responsible for producing that methane. And so the observation is pretty miraculous, but the scientific discovery doesn't stop there. We know that if it's a feed additive is going to be used for our feed supply, it's got to be safe for the animals and safe for consumers, safe for the environment, and then of course properly authorized by regulators as well. And so this has been an additional component around this compound that has supported it and basically getting check marks all along the line, and in terms of being a safe compound that can effectively reduce methane production. So it's a pretty neat story. I think it's unfolded fairly recently and quite rapidly.
The 3-NOP is approved for use in dairy in the US today, and expect it will be approved in the future for use in beef cattle. But for your listeners, just to be aware, currently not approved for use in beef cattle yet, but should be on the horizon. And as Paul alluded, I'm excited too, because I think there's even additional things coming and other compounds. And as Paul said, have to go through the rigor of being proven safe for the animal and people and environment. But I think I've been on record saying that through feed additives and management, I think we can cut methane that cattle naturally produce by up to 50% in the beef herd if we can figure out how to manage those products and get them delivered. So I think it's exciting and really an opportunity for us to, now that we've learned a lot, as Paul said, on how things work and how much is being produced. We know really, really well how much methane cattle produce under different scenarios, and can predict that fairly accurately. And now it's focused on how do we decrease it while maintaining or improving productivity.
Anything else on this topic you'd like to highlight today?
Just that, we're really looking forward to, well, we have. This has been a huge step for all of us in our careers. It's created a lot of demands on our time, and we really appreciate USDA NIFA for supporting this work, and of course IANR for bringing us all together so we can work as a team. And so just recognizing those important bodies that have supported us to get to this point and to realize the success in this work, I think is important too.
Yeah, and I'd add, Paul, that it's taken a lot of time and financial inputs from grants and so on, Aaron, to figure out how to measure this in these different scenarios. We're trying to measure it in extensive pasture systems, feedlot pens of cattle, and what we call our methane barn. And then we're this project and others, we've commonly used the head boxes, which are really fascinating, but also a challenge to use and collect a lot of information and data from. So, Aaron, it's not easy work. And so when people see things that we produce and they see a table with a couple numbers on methane, I think it's daunting how much money and time and effort over the last couple decades have been put in to figure out how to measure this accurately and in a robust system and across different scales. So we know, our current USDA project that we're talking about here is very focused on head boxes and these calorimeters, which have been used since the 1950s. But we are measuring methane in other situations, and it's just tough to do in a lot of extensive production systems. But we sure know a lot about how it works inside the cattle and how much is being produced in the rumen.
Well, again, thanks for joining me today. This is a project that I think for many of us is one that is a little hard to wrap our minds around. At least it is for me, as we think about all the different aspects. And, Galen, it's pretty easy to measure cattle onto a study, measure them off, and see how much they gained. But when we start thinking about methane emissions, gas produced, trying to capture and measure that, boy, we're in a totally different stratosphere in terms of trying to get a handle on those things. So a daunting project, but I think a very worthwhile one. And I think one that will produce information that'll be helpful to us both from a dairy and beef cattle perspective and have value for not only producers in Nebraska, but the United States and around the world. So again, thanks for your time today and for joining me.
Yes, our pleasure.
Thank you.
Well, for more information on the project that we are discussing in today's Beef Watch podcast, you can find this at beef.unl.edu. If you want to find the specific website there, it's the Cattle Methane Project. You can put that in the search engine at the beef.unl.edu website. There you'll find more about the project itself, and also you'll be finding research results as the project goes along.